have difficulty
admitting that they need help.
They have difficulty admitting that they need help from themselves. They have difficulty understanding that their own mind, their own custom, their own tradition is really the root cause of their problem. They need help to understand that when they hear the truth, obviously it's not going to make your past thoughts and traditions feel good. But so that you will not misunderstand and think that it's my opinion or my idea, I've chosen it, become my habit to tell you right out of the Bible. So that if you have a difficulty, it's with the Lord and not with me. You may fault me for not reading right, and you'll judge that because you have the same Bible in front of you. If I mispronounce words, then you can criticize me. But if you don't like the words, you're talking to the wrong person. Psalm 58:1. Speaking to those people who have difficulty believing that there's something wrong with them. This is the Lord now speaking. Do you indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Now, I'm glad he didn't say, do you indeed speak righteousness, O preacher, because then I'd be in trouble. So it is obvious that we're talking to thee. And thee happens to include me. It's just that I got it all week long when I was studying this. You being better than I, you only get a couple hours on Sunday, 3 hours to be specific. I've had this for 6 days. Do you indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Do you judge uprightly, O ye sons of men? So he's talking to two people there. Obviously the righteous, spiritual people who congregate, who become members of a church, say you don't speak righteousness just because you're going to church. You're in church because you need to hear something right. You're not here to speak righteousness. You're here to hear it. And then for those who feel that God is at the beach and up in the mountains and wherever they happen to be, he says, do you judge uprightly, O you sons of men? In other words, if you're such a good judge, why are you where you're at and why are you doing what you're doing? And why does it feel so horrible the next morning? Do you judge righteously, O you son? Your judgment is really flawed. And it isn't because God said so. It is the results of your judgments obviously have not brought the fruits that you want. So you have basically a problem of reconciliation. You want right results if it just didn't have to come through the truth. What a drag that is. Yea, in heart ye work wickedness. Ye weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. Weigh means you dispense. In other words, you do the things that you speak and you judge. Now, when's the last time someone held a gun to your temple and said, you must eat all this food and order some chocolate dessert too? No. No, you thought that, so you went out and you did it. Nobody pulled a gun on you. I don't care what your problem is or what you're trying to change or what you don't like. No one's forcing you to do it outside of you. So he says, in your heart you work the wickedness. You rationalize it. You make excuses for it. You're going to change someday. You're not that bad, and there's always others worse than you. So you work the violence in your heart, and then you weigh it out in the earth. And the weigh is the Hebrew word for saying dispense. In other words, you do what you think about. Now, for you to understand what the problem is, he says, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Now, how many of you ever took your children, newly born, and said, now we're going to teach this child how to lie? And we're going to teach this child how to get in all the cabinets and do everything that's wrong, because they'll never know how to do these things if we don't teach them. They'll never go in and break all my nice knickknacks and all that. I've got to teach them to do that. See, we have to spend some time here teaching this child how to be obnoxious, self-centered, and egotistical. No, they go astray as soon as they hand them to you. As soon as they hand them to you, they're already wrong. Now, here's the difficulty. Now, they're innocent as they can be, but they're already wrong. They're already self-centered. They want something. They cry right now. Don't stop. I don't care. 2 o'clock in the morning. You're sleeping. So what? I don't care if you're sleeping. I'm not. So if I'm not sleeping, how dare you think that you can sleep? They care less. They want to do something. They do it right on the spot. Don't they? They have no self-control, do they? They have no control of their physical being below the neck. Now we grow up and we now adults and we have no control of ourselves from the neck up. So we say, I don't want to do that anymore, I'm going to quit that. There's no self-control. See, the only thing that's happened is the latitude and the longitude of the location of your lack of control has just shifted, that's all. But as a child, you still have no self-control. You still get mad, you still get angry, you still abuse, you still overdo, you still do wrong things. You lack no control. The only thing is that the messes that we make, we have no mommy to come and change us anymore. But we're still making messes. Wherever the mood strikes you, you make a mess. And why? Because as an innocent child, you already had the propensity, the desire, you had the bent to do that already. And all you've done as an adult is you've honed by practice, and you've become good at it. By good, I don't mean you're any better at it, you're just not as flagrant. Much more subtle. Much harder to define and show you what you're doing wrong. Verse 4 says, their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf adder that stoppeth her ear. In other words, the problem with you as an adult is the same problem that you had as a child. You just don't hear. Stop that. Okay, and they go do it anyway. I told you not to do that. I know. Don't do that again. Okay, and they go do it again. You tell the child, don't do that. And you might as well put a chunk of meat there for a hungry lion, because that's what they're going to do. See, they're like, they're full of poison. They don't hear. Now, when you come here as an adult, you're much more difficult to handle. You need your ears cleaned out. It's a dirty job, by the way. But see, your ears are stopped up with poison. And the poison, the toxins that you're stopped up with are always characteristics. See, I always know when a person has their ears stopped up with poison. When they can't hear the truth. Poison is a somewhat less technical term for saying toxicity. Toxin and poison are synonymous. Now you show me a person who will not hear, and I'll show you someone who's poisoned, full of toxins. And the toxins come in the form of drugs, alcohol, spices, sugar, all the wrong fats, all the foods, all the things you can ingest, smoke, tobacco, or inhale that carry high degrees of toxicity. So you see, the individual who is poisoned is literally poisoned. This isn't just some metaphoric term. God's telling you there's something wrong with you spiritually, and it's manifesting physically. This isn't just a book where we come and tell nice stories about some little kid hit a big guy in the head with a rock. And we put the kids in the back and let them color and say, well, it wasn't that a nice story. No. It's not just a nice story. I'm going to tell you who the little kid with the rock is, and I'm going to tell you who's going to get hit between the eyes. See, we've got to make it relevant to today, or it's no good. So you see, the individual that will not hear has destined themselves and predestinated themselves to be addictive to high toxicity, whether it comes in food or liquid. It doesn't matter. You have to have it. It's the end result of not listening to the truth. You've been told since you were a child that sugar's going to rot your teeth. And you're going to wait until you have to gum your steak to death before you say, I think they were telling me the truth. But see, you never have been able to hear. Now, why do you think a child has such a desire? You don't have to teach them to like sugar and chocolate and all that's wrong, all the high toxic foods. Children just have a natural desire, what appears to be a natural desire. It's really an unnatural desire. But you have such a hard time teaching them to eat their vegetables, that's good for them. Well, welcome to the club. I have the same difficulty with you. You want to hear flattering words that make you feel good and tell you you're all right. You want sugar from this preacher. And I'm nobody's sugar daddy. I'm telling you that right now. You're not going to get what you think you're going to get here. I'm going to give you some stuff that's good for you. Now, you may not eat it. That's up to you. I don't have any problem with that. But if you must spit it out, I do ask you, don't do it here, please. We'll provide a place outside and go spit it out there. It's disgusting. But maybe necessary. I'm not going to be your judge in that situation. The point that I'm making is that your inability to hear is poison. It stoppeth up the ear. As a matter of fact, any doctor that knows anything other than medical will tell you that you always have an equilibrium problem if you have a hearing problem. There's a problem with balance. Now, all I have to do is watch how you live your life, how you eat, and it's not balanced. You don't have a balanced diet. You don't drink balanced. You either eat too much and drink too much, or you eat the wrong thing and drink the wrong thing. But there's a lack of balance. Something wrong with your ears. You see, not to hear throws you off in many different ways. As a matter of fact, I'm convinced that the beginning of all physical problems is a lack of an ability and or a desire to hear. That's where it all begins. Now, verse 5 says, these people that are full of poison will not hearken to the voice of charmers, charming never so wisely. In other words, it says, even if I told you the lies you wanted to hear and just charmed the boots off of you, first of all, they're not charming you wisely, but second, you're going to hear it anyway. Now, all you have to do is look back in your history and think of all those charming people who said, I love you forever. And you're such a this and such a that. You didn't listen to them. Number one, they weren't telling you the truth because you're not charming. You're a jerk. That's why they had to lie to you. See, if you were so charming, they could have told you the truth. But how in the world are they going to develop a relationship with you if they're going to tell you the truth? They can't, so they've got to lie to you. Understand how these charmers operate. Anybody that charms and flatters you has already made the decision, and rightfully so, that telling you the truth is going to make this relationship go nowhere. Probably get them slapped in the face. They cannot afford to tell you the truth. Is it any wonder then that you have a succession of charmers going through your life? They come and they go. They sing a nice tune for a while, but it just doesn't work. They need to charm. The problem is, charmers only charm serpents. Now, is this preacher calling you a snake? I didn't say snake. I said serpent. Please don't preach my message for me. I said charmers only seek out serpents. Now, if you remember, the first mention in the Bible of the word serpent came in the book of Exodus, making reference to the devil. If you'll also remember, the word serpent, translated from the Hebrew, besides meaning the devil and all the obvious things, the last definition, if you remember, meant to learn by experience. Now, the serpent is the one who learns by experience. Cannot be taught verbally. Only experience teaches the serpent. They've got to try it their way first. So you see, the serpent, always the individual that wants to learn by experience, needs to be charmed. You need to be told all kind of charming, flattering words that make you sway back and forth and keep you interested for a while. But I'll tell you one thing about serpents that I don't like. Sooner or later, you got to take a breath, charmer. And the minute they do, they're going to bite you. The minute you stop the charming, wham, they got you. See, they become addicted to flattering, charming words. And after a while, even a charmer can't lie to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the rest of his life. So then the relationship goes down the tubes. The relationship ceases to be because it was started on the wrong premise. Now, it doesn't matter, ladies or gentlemen. You can divorce that individual, that charmer, but what about the children? They're an image and likeness of the people that you're divorcing. Now, you cannot divorce your children, and yet to your horrified amazement, you're going to find out that he or she is going to be just like the one you threw out the front door, or the back door, out the window, wherever you got rid of them. In other words, you become addicted to charm. And wherever there's a charmer, there needs to be a serpent. So you see, when you start charming your children because you need to be charmed, then your children will only learn by experience. That's why you've got to beat them in order to get them to do something. And that's totally wrong. Man, if you cannot correct your children, it's because you're not corrected. You cannot beat your children into submission. Experience is going to teach them nothing other than how wrong they are. That's all experience teaches. Experience does not teach how to do something right. Because if experience taught you how to cure a problem, there would be no drug addicts. They're certainly experienced in taking drugs. But that doesn't give you the answer. It causes, or rather, it compounds the problem. The same is true of alcohol or food or cigarettes or anything else. Experience only makes it worse. So how can you teach a child whom you're trying to charm to learn by anything other than experience? And all experience does, as a matter of fact, when you go apply for the job, they say, do you have experience? Does that mean, have you learned how not to do this anymore? No, experience means, have you learned to do this very well? How much experience do you have? How good at this are you? Well, now, if you're trying to teach your children to stop something by charming them and having them learn by experience, all they're doing is getting better and better and better at it. Now take it from someone that knows, because as I look around at all the adults, you are the result of years and years of experience. I feel for you because I know what you're going to have on your hands when your children grow up, because I know all of you. Now the Lord says something interesting. He says, break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. In other words, give them a rap in the mouth, will you, Lord? Now, don't walk out of here and say that I said God's going to knock your teeth out. No, he said, break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. Now, if you knock their teeth out, they'd no longer be in their mouth, would they? Break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. And teeth is another word of saying the method by which you literally translate it would be better if it had been fangs. Because, you see, the poison can only be transmitted by the fangs. There has to be an opening in the fang, and it works on the principle of a hypodermic needle. In other words, you got to take a bite out of someone in order to transmit the poison. Now, the word bite literally means to use abusive, contemptuous, slanderous, harsh language to another individual. So when I see someone speaking harshly to their children, harshly to their husband or their wife, I see a serpent who's taken his or her fangs and is transmitting poison. Because what's going to happen? The individual that you talk to that way then becomes full of the same poison. And what do? They start cussing and fussing right back, don't they? You've literally poisoned them with what's wrong with you. So God is really saying, break the fangs, Lord. Break their ability or their desire to transmit this poison, so it starts with the husband, to the wife, to the children, and pretty soon the whole family is poisoned. In other words, calm. Let's sit down and talk this over. Let me correct you rather than punish you. Let correction again means that's the wrong way to do it, and this is the right way. Correction is not that's wrong and a rap in the mouth and don't ever do that again. That's punishment. That's grading an individual. That is not correcting them. Break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. Break out the great teeth of the young lions, O Lord. In other words, this is good for mama and papa as well as the children. See, you got a family full of snakes. And they transmit their poison to one another with the harshness of their words. let them melt away as waters which run continually when he bendeth his bow to shoot his arrows. Let them be cut in pieces. Verse 8 is the one we're going to be homing in on all morning. As a snail melteth, let every one of them pass away like the untimely birth of a woman, that they may not see the sun. You see, individuals like this do not see the sun. They may not see the sun. It isn't that they lack ability, they lack permission. In other words, the individual, if I've described you, you have no permission to see the sun. Now, obviously, we're speaking not here literally, because you can say, well, there it is and I can see it. What we're talking about here is a spiritual thing. The individual who thinks they already speak righteousness, judge uprightly, work wickedness in their hearts, dispense and speak lies, stop at their ear, transmits poison, always looking for charmers, they don't ever see the sun. They may not see the sun. Now, individuals who may not see the sun obviously live in darkness. Now, I'm going to describe to you the definition of the word dark, and you can decide for yourself, do you live in the dark? And if you do, it's because you may not see the sun, and you're not seeing the sun because you think you speak righteousness, and you think you judge uprightly, and you think that the answer to you is in you. But let's see first if you live in the dark. This is a simple definition of the word. If you have a dictionary and you can read the English language, you can check it out, and I hope you do. Dark means gloomy and cheerless. Now, if you are prone to depression, and if circumstances and things that happen have a tendency to make you gloomy and cheerless, you live in the dark. And the reason you live in the dark is that you don't have the sun. And the reason you don't have the sun is, again, you already think you know everything. So dark means to be gloomy, cheerless, and hopeless. But it also means to be very somber. Dark means to be angry and sullen and evil. Dark means to be hidden and secret. See, the problem is there's something hidden and secret in the back of your life that you don't want to deal with. Maybe you don't even know how. And this hidden dark thing, something happened to you in your past that has turned you off through resentment to whoever might represent that. If you had a problem with authority as a child, especially male authority, you're squirming in your seat right now. If someone who was in authority misused or abused you, then through resentment you are forever programmed to be against and very leery of anyone who represents authority. So you see, there's something hidden and secret in your past. And you choose to keep it hidden and live in the dark with it. It's the cockroach of life. You see, it was simply the minute you turn on the light, they scatter all over. Well, the sun is the source of light. And when I say sun, I use it interchangeably, S-U-N and S-O-N. We're talking spiritually about the Lord Jesus Christ, truth. Now, there's one other characteristic of living in the dark, or several. Number one, a person who's in the dark is ignorant and unenlightened. Why? Because of the last definition of the word dark. It means neither giving nor receiving light. You know, and this is so characteristic of the people that I deal with on a daily basis. You admit you have a problem that you cannot resolve for yourself, so you can't give light. And then when I say, well, you should do this and this because this is what the Bible says, you won't receive it either. So you see, you consign yourself to a situation where you neither give light, you don't know what to do. It is obvious what you've done isn't working. So you can't give light. You can't go out and teach someone how to get rid of the problem that you have because you don't have the answer. So you can't give light. You can't shed light on it. But amazingly, you won't receive light on it either. In other words, the fact that you do not have the answer to your problem, you don't have the light, would assume that individual would be crying for light. The problem is, it isn't that you lack intelligence. Someone will say, who does he think he is? He thinks he's smarter than I am? No, I don't think that. I know that. But I'm going to tell you why. It isn't that I have more mental capacity. Well, I can take a C, Muff and Puff, Jane Run book. You know, remember the ones we... And I'll take one, and you take the other one, and I'll bet you I'll read mine, and you won't be able to read yours. All I have to do is put you in a totally dark room. And I'll be in a light room. I can read mine, and you can't read yours. Is there anything wrong with our brains? Our perception? Our intelligence? No, you lack light. See, so don't try to couch your defenses in an attempt to say, well, I'm smarter than he is. I don't think that's true. I know that isn't true, but that isn't the problem anyway. The problem is you just lack light. And if you will listen with an open mind, then the light will come in, and then you'll be able to make your own judgment. I'll not make it for you. I don't want to make it for you, and I can't. I'm just trying to give you the ability to see what you have. And once you see what you have, unless there's something drastically wrong with you mentally and perceptually, you'll make the right choice. However, if you do not, well, we've got a solution for that too. But at least we're testing you to find out what the problem is. The problem initially is you have no light. Now, why do you have no light? To understand that, we have to go back to verse 1 and categorize ourselves as individual by behavior and attitude. Do you indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? First, again, it's speaking to those that are enlightened, those that think they have the spiritual answers. So, do you speak righteousness? Righteousness means that is right naturally, morally, and legally. Well, right off the bat, you know that's wrong. Because if you were doing what was right naturally, you wouldn't have the problems that you have in the physical area. There'd be no addictions to anything. You wouldn't overdo or do things you shouldn't do. There would be none. So obviously, we do not speak righteousness. Now, if you spoke righteousness, if you spoke right morally, then you couldn't do immorally. So the fact that you do not do morally everything means you don't speak morally. And then he says, do you speak righteousness in the legal area? How many of you ran a stop sign on the way to work here? Or on the way to church? How many of you parked wrong across the street? I saw you, don't lie. Because you thought the parade was coming over here, didn't you? So you suspended the rules. No, the lines go this way for a particular reason. So see, whenever there's a way around it, you take it, don't you? So see, you don't speak righteousness. Whenever you have an opportunity to do wrong, you take it, just like that. Now, righteousness also means to be right in a moral or forensic sense. It's necessary that you understand that God says, if you think you're right, you're going to have to understand what right means. And then if you don't qualify, please don't say you're right. First of all, it says to be right or righteousness means to be right in a moral sense. Moral, you know, you thought moral meant to do something good and do something commendable and do something pure. You know what moral means? It means how you do something. So if it's moral, you do it right, and if it's immoral, you do it wrong. So morality really means your manner and your customs. Moral means your manner and your customs. Moral also means the capability of making the distinction between right and wrong in conduct. Now understand this. Morality doesn't mean that you need to go out and be a nice person. In order for you to be moral in a moral sense, you just have to know the difference between right and wrong. So when you say, well, this is all right because I can quit whenever I want, or I'm not as bad as someone else, you're not making a distinction between right and wrong. And I don't care what you do. That's not for me to judge. All I'm saying that as long as you don't make a distinction between right and wrong, you're going to do wrong. Now, I'm not saying that you need to go out and stop anything. That's not my judgment to make. I'm not here to criticize you. I'm here to shed some light as to why you can't make the judgment that you're upset and you think I'm trying to make. Well, if you can't make it, if you won't make it, and I can't, we got a problem here. Now, I understand that I can't make the judgment. I'm only trying to help you understand you won't. So here's the problem. You need to make the distinction between right and wrong. Now, that basically means whatever your habit is, don't make excuses for it. That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is call it what it is. Whatever the habit is and you don't like it, don't make excuses for it. Make the distinction between right and wrong. And your behavior will eventually change. The difficulty is, when you're alone, the distinction between right and wrong is, oh, this is horrible. And the minute somebody knows what you've done, then you start making excuses for it. And you get into denial. So what is the difficulty? You make the distinction between right and wrong depending on convenience. Now, he says, now once you make the distinction between right and wrong in a moral sense, now you can do it in a forensic sense. Forensic means something that's suitable for public debate or formal argumentation. In other words, something that's valid. Now, here's what I'm trying to tell you now. If you understand what I've just said, you can be a blessing to your children. You can sit with them and make the distinction between right and wrong and say, sweetheart, this is wrong, and this is why it's wrong. And that, see, that's morally. You can teach your child morally, this is wrong, and this is right, and you can do it in a forensic sense. You can do it in a way that would stand up in a law court. That's what forensic means. Something that's suitable for law. Something that cannot be debated, cannot be argued, and has force. In other words, what I'm sharing with you now is a way to raise your children in the way you were never raised. And God is saying it's not too late because I've given you a pastor, a preacher, someone that will give you the principles that you never had as a child, that you never had the advantage of. Now, the fact that you didn't have the advantage is not necessarily your fault. The fact that you still don't want the advantage, that's your fault. So you see, you cannot really blame your parents or whoever you're trying to blame for never giving you the truth when you're sitting there rejecting it now. So given your opportunity, you still reject it. In other words, what this is saying, do you indeed think, talk, act right? And are you able to justify yourself? Do you even know what's right? That's what the man is asking. Now, all you have to do is look at your past, look at yourself, and look at your children. They're the perfect mirror of you. And the answer ought to be, no, I don't speak righteousness. Now, he's talking to the congregation here. These are the people that think they're right. Remember when you were out in the world? I never made any excuses. Hey, I drank and I partied like everybody else. So what? Everybody else did. I never tried to speak righteous. I cussed like everybody else, told the same dirty jokes, laughed at them even though I had heard them before. That was amazing to me, you know? See a guy out on the golf course, I'm cold sober, tells me a joke, and that's dumb. See him the same night, we get smashed, he tells me the same joke, and I'm rolling in the aisles. Something wrong there. Stopped up my ear with poison, didn't I? Yeah, it's amazing. And you know why else I know, now that I think about it, while there were a bunch of serpents in that place, with all our ears were stopped up, we'd walk in, you know this as well as I do, walk into a, quote, party, or a bar, early, and, how you doing? Yeah, how are you? One or two. How you doing there? Three or four. Hey, how's it going? All of a sudden, nobody can hear anymore. Everybody's screaming at each other. And the voices, they crank up the music. They say, we can't hear. You thought the music was loud. You know why the music is loud? Because they can't hear the music because you're screaming. You can't hear anymore. The toxicity, the poison that you're ingesting is literally hindering your ability to hear. Have you ever noticed the decibel level at the bar always, the later it is, the more everybody's screaming. Everybody's laughing louder at God knows what. But it doesn't alter the fact that you can no longer hear. And I remember this, you know, some guy say something to me at 8 o'clock in the evening, and it was fine. He say the same thing at 11:30, and wham, we had a fight. Not only do I not hear what's saying, I don't hear it right. Guy says, God, whatever set you? Oh, you can't say that to me. Well, I didn't say that. Well, yes, you did. And there the fight is on. You know that as well as I do. Now, all you have to do is take that home and say, I don't drink. Bless God, I'm a married man and I'm a married woman and I don't drink. I didn't say poison only came from alcohol and what we call chemicals. Emotion is the biggest poison of all. Pride and anger. One gets proud and angry in the home, and they start hollering and screaming, bite the other one, they're full of poison, and pretty soon everybody's screaming at everybody else. Why do you think the neighbors know all your business? Why can't you just tell a guy, look, I think you're a jerk, darling. Why do you have to scream it? Because you've been poisoned, that's why. It doesn't add meaning to the word. It doesn't add anything to it. The problem is you can't even hear what you're saying. You've got to scream it. Why? Because he won't hear you any other way, and then he's got to scream it back. So you see, what's happening is everybody's poisoned. Now, when you learn, when you grow up in a family like this, I'm going to tell you right now what's happening. You grow up in a family where there's a lot of shouting, a lot of screaming, a lot of high emotional output. Anger for everything. Or even on the positive side, everybody's slobbering all over everybody else and there's high degrees of emotion. You have now grown up in an environment that's always got you up, either in anger or in this so-called positive love. Now, you go and then you sit down, then you see, you get your children addicted to this. They're all screaming at them, for, do this, do that. Don't. You can't sit down and talk to them like a human being. Well, now you've got them psychologically and physically addicted to this highness, this hyperactivity. And then you sit them down and say, eat your vegetables and your corn. Eat your peas. I don't like this stuff. It's too bland. Give me some exciting food. And by definition, exciting food is anything that has high degree of toxicity. A lot of stimulants in the food. Well, what have you done? You've addicted your children. Now you're going to fight them forever to stay out of the cookies, stay out of the sugar, and later on out of the soft drinks, the Coke, and then later on the hard drinks, the cocaine. Why? Because you've addicted them to that. You don't deal with them calmly. That's one of the reasons we don't have a bigger church than we do. If we had a church where we rock and rolled, well, we'd have the whole block. We'd knock out this wall here and throw the cleaners out because we'd be dancing up a storm and screaming up a storm and say, oh, this is just like home. We got a man up in front screaming at everybody and everybody's screaming at everybody else. Well, this is home sweet home, a family reunion. You're not used to being in a family when one speaks at a time. And it isn't done in anger. You can be shown this is wrong with you, but I'm not upset at you because I want to correct. In fact, I'm giving you an alternative. Here's the way it ought to be done. Here's the way you're doing it, and the choice is yours. And if you choose wrong today, we'll try it again next week. If you choose wrong next week, we'll try it again. You've never been raised that way. Now, once you can get your mind right, so to speak, as in Cool Hand Luke, once you can get your mind right and get settled down and get used to this new way of being spoken to, you're going to see that physically your desire for lard and sugar and whatever toxin levels, caffeine, whatever it is, nicotine, I don't care what it is, your desire for that is going to minimize and lessen on a graduated scale to the same degree that you're less exposed to this high degree of volatile emotionalism. And you're going to end up at the perfect weight with a clean system, rosy cheeks, all the health that God ordained for you. But you're not going to do it by jumping in front of the TV set with Richard Simmons. That's not going to do it. And it amazes me, the men that want to lose weight have to do it through Jane Fonda, don't they? I wonder if they're really watching that to lose weight, primarily. And the same is true of ladies. I'm telling you, there's a better way. If you start and understand that you were trained wrong to begin with, then you won't make the argument that you speak righteousness, O congregation. Now, in order to understand what a congregation is, you need to know what the word means. The word congregation from the Hebrew means to sit in silence and to be tongue-tied. Congregation means to be put to silence, to be speechless and dumb. That's what the word means. I don't make these up. See, I don't write the songs. I just sing them. Now, if you want to fault the resonance and the tone quality, you're certainly welcome to do that. But I'm talking content here. In other words, he says, the problem with you is you need to be put to silence. You need to have someone that loves you enough to answer all of these ridiculous arguments that you've been fed all your life. And do it in such a way that you still have an alternative, and your acceptance of those answers or rejection is not going to alter this person's attitude or behavior to you. You need to be put to silence. It doesn't say gag them. Put them to silence. Now, how do you do that? You answer their questions. No matter how many times they ask the same question, no matter how ridiculous it might be, you need to put them to silence. See, they're legitimate to the individual who's posing them. These questions have always worked. Oh, you don't love me. Something's wrong with me. You hate me. You're not a Christian. You don't love me. All those things. Like when Mama said, you don't love me anymore. See, those questions have to be silenced. They have to be answered. I have to prove to you that I love you in spite of you. I love you in spite of the fact that I can't stand you. Now, who in their right mind would want a job like this? The pay isn't that great. Take my word for it. The hours are worse, and the working conditions could not be worse if I intended them that way. And the grade of people you deal with is nothing to write home about either. Now, I'm not saying that you're bad people. I'm saying I only deal with the bad side of you. That's my job. See, here's the thing about it. You show each other all your goodness. You're always on your best behavior with each other, and that's all right. But look what I get. And here's the irony. This is what I want. And the minute you understand that you can't get me upset or angry at you, and I'm going to put you to silence, gone. That's okay, too. If I don't see your eyeballs, then I'd just as soon see your taillights. I don't care. I'll deal with you coming or going. It doesn't matter to me. I have no desire one way or the other. I just do what I do. And if you want to benefit from it, praise God. And if you don't, praise God anyhow. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, you need to be made speechless. And it isn't with threats and intimidation like you did. They did as a child. Shut up or I'm going to give you this. Shut up or you don't do that. One more word out of you and I'm going to kill you. One more word out of you and you're sitting in that corner until you're 25. Well, that's all right, but I doesn't answer the question, Dad. Told you to shut up. You see, the difficulty is you were raised in that environment, and now you think that all men in authority are going to be the same way. So along comes Jesus Christ in your life, the man with the ultimate authority. And you think he's going to slap you around and make you do things, and you're going to stop that or else I'm going to give you a lick across the chops. No, he's not. He's going to correct you lovingly. He's going to do it in your time. And if you want to suffer for another 20 years, suffer for another 20. But when you're ready, he's ready. He's not upset at you. If he's not upset at you and he's perfect, how could I be imperfect as I am? You need to understand that what you've been taught has been wrong. So wrong that you don't even have the ability to distinguish between right and wrong. And because of that, now you have to be put in a congregation. A congregation is a gathering of people, a committee, so to speak. It means a flock. And I'll leave you with this. A flock is a group of people living, feeding, and moving together. Amen. I'll leave you with that. I'll pick up there very shortly, but there's what. Living, feeding, and moving together. I was asked here recently, why does brother such and such and sister such and such have a little bit? Why is all that good? We're moving together, that's why. Now, some of you, we live together, almost literally anymore. Once in a while, we even feed together. I suspect you've nibbled just a little bit, some of you, on what I said this morning. But are we moving together? Only to the degree that we live and feed together do we move together. And only to that degree are you a flock. If you're not a flock, you're not a member of the congregation. If you're not a member of the congregation, you still think you know everything, and you've been sitting there in your pew debating this whole message with me. Then you need to be speechless. Brother Don, would you close the services? Psalm 58:1. Do you indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Do you judge uprightly, O ye sons of men?
Now, for those people now who either by practice or by preference do not feel particularly religious, and their argument is not based on religious considerations, but rather on their own training and what they just think is right, to them, God also has an answer. He says, "Do ye judge uprightly, O ye sons of men?" Now, it's important that you know that judging uprightly has a manifestation in your life. In other words, you can tell if you judge things right. First of all, to judge means to govern. Do you govern right? And by governing, that basically means your family. But more importantly, do you govern yourself uprightly? Do you make decisions that are good for you, that bring you happiness and bring you what you want? Do you judge uprightly? Now, you can tell whether you everyone judges, by the way. Everyone governs. It's not the issue. The issue is, do ye judge uprightly? Now, this is for people, now, understand, that think their training and how they were taught is the right way. He says, do you judge uprightly? Uprightly means, or govern, judge means govern, uprightly. Uprightly, we could say this, do you govern uprightly? Uprightly means evenly and straightly. It means to make things right, to make things pleasant, and to make things prosperous. The individual that judges uprightly can only do it by telling you the truth. And the truth will, one, make you right, two, make you pleasant, and three, make you prosperous. Now, you can always tell if you're hearing the truth. Now, I didn't say you can tell whether you're being told the truth. You can tell whether you're hearing the truth. It'll make right, make pleasant, and make prosperous. Now, the first thing, the truth, if you're willing to hear it, once you decide, my life is a mess, I want to know the truth. Don't worry that you're going to get involved somewhere where someone's going to lie to you and run you off into the wild blue yonder in some kind of a cult experience if you really want to know and make things right. Because you see, when you really come to the end of yourself and you realize, I don't know, I'm seeking you, Lord, tell me what's right. You will know it's right because it'll, number one, it'll make things right, it'll make things pleasant, and it'll make things prosperous. If it doesn't do those three things, you're not being told the truth. Now, the first thing it'll do is make right. Right means to put things in order, to make them straight. Right means to be direct. I don't care whether you like this or not. I don't care if I never see your face again. I'm going to tell you what's right. I'm direct. And I'm straight. It doesn't matter to me. Hopefully, it'll matter to you. Straight also means to make things in accordance with justice, law, and morality, not tradition. But right also means to make things in accordance with fact and reason. The fact of the matter is, you got some problems. The second fact is, there's a reason for it. And the third one you don't like, the reason is you. To make right also means to make correct in thought, statement, or action. In other words, if you're being told the truth, if you're hearing the truth, you'll think right, talk right, and act right. Now, if you're not acting right, it's because you're not talking right, and that's because you're not thinking right. That's because your thoughts are not right. Now, once you hear the truth and accept it, it'll make things right. You'll think, talk, and act right. Now, it'll also make pleasant. Pleasant means to have an agreeable manner. Pleasant means something that's agreeable to the mind or senses. Believe it or not, there'll come a time when you'll look forward to coming to church and hearing what this man has to say. It will be agreeable to your mind and your senses. Now, as long as it isn't agreeable, that just basically means there's still something that we're working on. But once it makes pleasant, once it's agreeable to your mind and senses, once you are hearing what's right, that's in accordance with justice, law, and morality, when you hear that's in accordance with fact or in reason, then it'll become agreeable to your mind or senses. You'll say, finally, someone's telling me the truth. Now, here's the iron test. Here's the acid test, if you will. The last part of it means to make prosperous. And prosperous means having continued success. It means to succeed, to thrive, and to grow in a vigorous way. Now, if you're not doing those things, if you're not thriving and growing, if you're not in order, if you don't have an agreeable manner, if you're not prospering, if you don't have success, if you can't pay all your bills, if you're not happy, if you don't look forward to your life and what it's bringing, then obviously you're not judging uprightly. You know what the problem are? You're the sons of men. Instead of being the son of God or the child of God, you are the child of men. You're the child of your past, of your tradition, the way you were taught. Now the word men comes from the Hebrew word Adam, which is where we get our English word Adam. And Adam, basically, it means the name of the first man. Now here's the problem. In your life, you're first. See, all Adams have that name for a reason. He was the first, and he's self-centered. He owned everything. Nobody had anything but him. Everything belonged to Adam. Adam was the center of God's attention because there was no one else. So see, Adam was a spoiled child, wasn't he? Now, why did God do that? To show you that even if you owned the whole world, you were in it all by yourself. You had no one else to blame, no one else to argue with. God only paid attention to you because you're it, and everything was yours. You'd still rebel. So it doesn't make any difference. I'd get rid of that man and my life would be different. Yes, it would. It would be no better, but it would be different. See, your problem is you're an Adam. You got to be first. And unfortunately, you're looking for the Garden of Eden. But even if you could find it, and I hope to God you don't, because the minute you get it, you're going to ruin it. Just like he did. Adam means to be the first, to be the first man. First means to have priority, to have superiority, to have preeminence, to be first. Watch your children. You want to do something, and they got to get first in line, don't they? I don't care what it is, unless it's something good. Then they get last in line. Kids are backwards. And I don't care what age they are, by the way. They just get more backwards, that's all. They get further from the back or further to the front. The older they get, the more they have to be. And look around. The older folks get, if they don't get this right, the more the congregation grows and they don't get that special attention, then they have to go somewhere else where they do get it. The problem is they're addicted to being first. Now the difficulty with such an individual, the reality of life, will not allow you to be first in every situation. So you have to live in a fantasy world, and there you're first. In this fantasy world, you're a Playboy bunny, or you're Hugh Hefner, or Tom Selleck, or some combination thereof. Whatever you want to be, you're first. You can finagle this fantasy any way that you want. However, the older we get, the less childlike we become in our mind, the harder that fantasy world becomes, because the grim reality is there. We need help then to fantasize. And there's where you get all your mind-altering drugs. They help this fantasy to be more facilitated, because the reality just won't allow it anymore. So see, the problem is now you're a son of the first man. Adam, or Adam, where we get this word man, also means ruddy or red. It means to show blood in the face. See, you're the son or the child of an individual who, whenever something happened, their way of resolving things was to get angry. And anger makes the heart beat faster, raises the blood pressure, the blood pumps faster, and your face gets red. Sometimes to the degree your eyeballs will even get bloodshot. Basically, this means an individual that through emotion shows blood in the face. This is how they resolve things. Ruddy or men, the word Adam, besides showing blood in the face, means to flush or turn rosy. Now, the problem with people like this, your thoughts are nothing but waste material. They need to be flushed. See, so whenever you're thinking wrong and people are not reacting the way you want them to, your dirty thoughts, your wrong thoughts, and I'm trying to clean this up a little bit. Your thoughts are waste material. What you do is you take this pure word, the truth, you take whatever you want out of it and leave the rest for waste. Now, when people do not respond to you the way that you want, you have dirty thoughts. Now, I'm not talking sexually dirty or evil or criminal. I just mean wrong thoughts. Now, someone comes along that does not agree and does not react the way you want them to your wrong thoughts. Now, they've exposed that your thoughts are wrong. So what's the first thing you have to do? Flush. There comes all the blood. You're being flushed. Now, if your thoughts are right, you could just call me and say, well, hey, if you don't want it that way, I can understand, then do what you want to do. I'm only suggesting to you. This is something that works for me. This is something that I got out of the Word of God, and it's worked for countless people for countless years. If you choose not to, that's fine. Maybe when you change your mind, another time if you change your mind, come back and we'll talk again. No necessity to flush. Now, I know you've been to churches where they preach up a storm, and if you don't do what they want or you walk in wearing pants or whatever, the preacher gets flushed, doesn't he? So does everybody else. They got dirty thoughts, that's why. Listen, if you can't tell the truth and not be emotional and angry and vindictive and critical, then you don't have the truth. You may be telling it, but you don't have it. Now, there's a big difference. So you see, this man, this tradition, what you've taught, been taught, is to show blood in the face, which is another word for flushing. In other words, that's the best lie detector. In fact, it's the only true lie detector. You cannot hide that. All you have to be is told the truth, and you be harboring a lie. And I don't care what you say. If I see the slightest discoloration in your skin, I know you're lying. To what degree and in what area, time will tell. But I know you're lying. Because you have a desire then to flush. And what happens is the mechanisms, how that works, and lie detectors work on that principle. They put sensors in key places to monitor respiration, blood pressure, perspiration, I believe, electrical impulses from the brain. They're monitoring all those things that cause the flushing. Now, why they need to buy a machine that costs $85 million when I've got a Bible here cost me $19.99 and I can do it infallibly. I can watch it. I can look in the mirror, and if I see the slightest bit of red, Rube, you're lying. This is something you don't want exposed. And you're going in the toilet, my friend. Your thoughts are in the toilet. Is that, where else? What other room do we flush in? See, flush means to become red in the face with embarrassment or anger. Now, why would you be embarrassed if your thoughts are so good? Why would you be angry unless you were upset because they're exposed? So to become flushed means you're embarrassed and angry. And if you're embarrassed and angry, then what you're thinking is wrong. It's just that simple. And you see, that's why God is saying when you become that way, you're not judging uprightly. You're not making a sound judgment. And that's why you can look after and say, why in the world did I do that? I must have been stupid. Yes, you were. But the irony of it is you still are. So you keep talking past tense. The fact of the matter is that every time you show blood in the face, you've impaired your ability to think rationally. You now become emotional. Flush means also to drive something from cover, as when you flush out birds. See, what's happening when a person gets flushed, there's something deep, dark, and secret in your past. And the minute yours truly or anyone speaks to that thing, it flushes it out. It drives it from cover. See, what do you mean by that? It's not what I mean. Why did your face get red? Why are you flushed? Why are you angry? It's what you're trying to cover, not what I mean. So you see, flush means to drive something from cover, to uncover something. And that's the purpose of the messages, that's the purpose of the word, and incidentally, that's the purpose of any therapy. Whether it's out in the world or here in the church, therapy, the purpose is to get to the cause of your problem and remove it. You've got a thorn in your paw. Now, if I could catch you long enough and take that thorn out of your paw, you'd love me forever. Isn't that the way Aesop's fable? I just want to pull the thorn out of your paw is all I'm trying to do. And your ma, too, for that matter. Because it's a double problem. Flush also means not only to drive from cover, but it means to be cleaned, washed, or emptied with a sudden flow of water. Now, I can always see that when we're really hit home and there's a sudden flow of water. I see tears, spit, mucus, and sweat. I mean, everywhere. There's just water coming. We're flushing. You're in the toilet. You see, this is not some metaphorical thing. This actually is the principle by which the, quote, private room works. There's a sudden flow of water. It's a cleansing. Now, some people cry tears of joy for being released, and others tears of anger for being exposed. But the fact of the matter is, when you hear the truth, there's going to be a sudden flow of water. And if you choose to make it tears and spit and mucus and sweat, that's up to you. But understand the process by which your body is going through. All you're doing is you're confirming to yourself that what God is telling you is right. Absolutely right. And you're responding the wrong way to a right thing. So see, the individual who responds with tears, with sweat, with mucus, and that's what happens when a person gets emotional. They'll start crying, the nose starts running. They can't talk without spitting in your face because they start talking very fast and very loud. Now, the louder you talk, the more air you have to take in, the more air you put out, and since it's very moist in there, we have different interesting spray patterns that develop. And then there's a sweat, literally perspiration. So you see, what God is really saying here is when you react that way, you can't judge uprightly. You cannot make a right decision. Which means that every decision that you make when you're in that condition is going to be a wrong decision. Literally, you're learning by experience. So obviously, to judge things the way you've been taught in the past is wrong. Now, here's the result of that. To those that are the sons of men, who want to do it according to your own natural instincts, verse 2 deals with you. It says, yea, in heart ye work wickedness. Ye weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. Now it says, in heart you work wickedness. Now understand this, and I've said this so many times from this church. Please excuse me for this. If you don't, too bad. I'm going to do it anyway. In heart, ye work wickedness. Now, I thank God that he never said, oh, Rube, you've done some bad stuff there, boy. I'm going to slap you down. See, the things that you do are the result of the sin. I don't care what you do. That's just hurting you. That doesn't hurt me. And God says you can't handle it at that point anyway because your body loves to do that. If you're going to ask your body to stop doing that, you're futile. There's no way. It says, here's the problem. In heart, ye work wickedness. Now, heart doesn't mean this thing that goes boom, ba boom, boom, boom every time you're going to make a stupid decision. Heart means the feelings, the will, and the intellect. But it also means something else. The feelings, the will, the intellect as the source of emotions. In emotion, ye work wickedness. Heart, this Hebrew word, it means the center or the source of your emotions. In other words, you don't make your decisions with the rational mind, you make it with the emotional mind, the spine, which because of the medulla oblongata is connected, and it really is the lower brain. Now, this is the part of your brain that feels. This is where the electrical impulses come through. So if you have a spinal separation, you become paralyzed. Because signals can no longer go from the brain to the rest of your body. So you, in fact, have no more feeling, no more movement from that injury down. So he says, basically, what you're doing is you're thinking with your spine, with your back, with feelings, with emotion. You're not thinking with the rational mind. Now he says, when you do that, in those emotions, ye work wickedness. Heart or emotions also means the source of your own personality, your own attributes. It means your own emotional nature. You work wickedness in your own personality through your own attributes because of your emotional nature. So what is the real sin? It's your training. What you do is the wages of the sin. I don't care about that. Neither does God, by the way. Because God didn't come to save your body. He came to save your soul. And soul is the way you think, your mind, the rational mind. Now, what your body does will change, but we got to deal with the mind first. Heart also means any of various human feelings such as love, devotion, sympathy, and mood. Now, notice it says any of various human feelings. Human love is a killer. Human devotion is a killer. Human sympathy is a killer. You know why? Because it only has love for itself. So as a result, you gravitate to people that have the same problem that you have, and you marry someone that's just like you, and then you have children that are just like both of you. How in the world are you ever going to be happy? You're not even happy alone, because after it's all over and you end up by yourself, you're still miserable. So what was the problem to begin with? You? Your heart, your emotion, your devotion? In other words, what this is saying, an emotion of feelings, of love, devotion, sympathy, and your moods, you work wickedness. That's the source of the problem. If you just simply stop being emotional and let's sit down and talk rationally, you would see that what you do has no rational reason for getting done. And you would also see that you have to be poisoned by your own emotions so that you cannot hear the wisdom of what you're being told, and therefore you can go ahead and do what you want to do. But always the morning after is depression. Always. There's a coming down from the high. That's in everything. Now he says, in your heart you work wickedness. And wickedness doesn't mean you go out and rob banks, although that's the end result of it. Wickedness means to distort and be perverse. And distort means to misrepresent and misstate and pervert things. In other words, you hear what I say and you change it a little bit. That's distorting. God says that's wicked. If you hear the truth, leave it alone. Say yes or no to it, but leave it alone. Don't add from it and don't take from it. Just say, I don't want that, or I do. But to distort the truth is wickedness. I've said this 1,000 times. You don't have to agree with this, but I warn you, don't talk against it, because it might be right. If you don't like it, don't talk for it. It might be wrong. If you think it's right, then speak for it. But in no case, speak against it. Because if it's right, you're asking for trouble. And your situation will get worse, not better. Now, in emotion, in heart, you work wickedness. Wickedness comes from the word perverse or perverseness. And here's the wickedness that God is saying, persisting in error or fault. Stubbornly contrary and obstinately disobedient. You see, it isn't the fact that you're doing wrong, it's the fact that you persist in doing wrong. Now, if you would say, this is wrong and I don't want to do it, then you would no longer be persisting. You'd still be doing it, but you wouldn't be persisting in error or fault. You wouldn't be stubbornly contrary. You would say, that's wrong and I know I'm doing it and there's no way that I can justify it and this is the truth about what I'm doing and I'm in agreement. I haven't stopped it yet. I may not, and it's my business if I do or not, and it is, but at least you're no longer persisting in the error or the fault. And now you're in agreement with the truth. You got half the battle won. You watch how your circumstances will change. The difficulty, the problem is that you persist in your error and your fault. And therefore you distort. Now he says this is the reason for it. Another 15 minutes and then you can all go see some other clowns. Verse 3. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. I'm going to prove to you that you folks are liars. And you can find out when you're lying because lying has a physical manifestation. So they'll never have to come to this church just to be told what you already know. It says, the wicked are estranged. Wicked is morally wrong. Those that declare wrong. Those that are wrong, do wrong, and declare wrong. He says they're estranged from the womb. Estranged means turned aside. In other words, you don't want to hear. You don't want a confrontation. Watch your children, by the way. When you bust them cold turkey, they won't look at you. Look at me. Pay attention. They're looking everywhere. They're turned aside. You see, you are never going to make an impression on your children until you require that they look at you. Eye contact is absolutely vital. If they're turned aside, I'm telling you right now, you're going to beat them. You're going to be upset at them. They're going to be upset at you. You're not making contact. You're not communicating because you've allowed them to turn aside. You say, do this, and they're looking the other way. They're halfway started. They have no intention of doing it. They've turned aside. That's why I always look for eye contact. Always. Because if the individual is turned aside, we're not communicating. Now he says, those of you that are turned aside, won't confront it, won't look it in the face, in other words, are estranged from the womb as soon as you are born. The womb means that originates, that where you take form and develop. In other words, that can be your church or home or wherever. It says they go astray right from the womb. Now you can tell people that are wicked and estranged because they go astray. Now what does astray mean? To vacillate. Vacillate means to show indecision and to fluctuate. In other words, what basically this is saying, it says you've gone astray. Now people say, well, that means I'm not going to church anymore. That means I don't read my Bible anymore. That means I don't like Reuben anymore. Or I never did. That doesn't bother me. That's not what astray means. To go astray means to vacillate. That means you will waver in mind. The night before you say, I'm going to do this, and the next morning you say, I wish I hadn't done that. Now, obviously, you're vacillating in your mind. Next week, I'm going to do this project to do that. Come next week, you don't do it. What's the problem? You're vacillating. You're going astray. You waver in mind. Astray also means to show indecision. You just can't seem to make up your mind what you want. There's only one thing you're sure of, what you don't want. And the thing you don't want is always the thing you have. And the thing you don't have, that's what you want. Now, the minute you get that thing that you didn't have that you wanted, now that you got it, you don't want it. So now you want the thing you had before that you didn't want before. You didn't have the thing you don't want now that you didn't have then that you wanted all the time. See, I do that every now and then to make sure you're following me. People say, sometimes, then I say, oh, I lost that brother. Got to go back and do it again. But man, I saw a lot of this. See, so vacillating doesn't mean you've gone astray from me. You don't have to, what am I? Nothing. What are we? Just like you. Vacillate, to go astray means you are now wavering. You can't make a decision. And once you do make a decision, you're never happy with it. Then you want to make the other decision, or you're sorry that you didn't make a different decision. You've gone astray. In other words, you're wandering. And he says, you do this as soon as you be born, speaking lies. Now, let me tell you what this word lies means, and then I'll let you go. I don't know. I'm not keeping you anyway. The door's unlocked. Lies means to lie in order to deceive and be found a liar. But you know what else lies mean that I didn't know until yesterday? Lie comes from a Latin word that means to fail. In other words, those who lie fail. Now, whenever you do something and it fails, it's because you lied. Now, whenever you tell the truth about something, it's going to succeed. So you see, you can go to college, you can go to seminars, you can go wherever you want to go, and as long as you're failing, you're telling lies. And the reason you're telling lies is because you're hearing lies. Now, you can look around this congregation and check yourself. Look at the amount of success that is being experienced by the people in this church as opposed to where you were when you came in here. You're not failing anymore. See, to fail means you're lying. The two words are synonymous. They come from each other. You cannot lie and not fail. See, we've been taught by the world, if you can lie and get away with it, you're going to succeed. That's backwards. That's a lie from the pit of hell. So you can take it on good authority that when you fail, whether it's your marriage, your health, your wallet, your pocketbook, whatever it is that's failing, it's because you're lying. And lying again comes from the word fail. And fail means to be lacking or insufficient. See, lies will never bring you what you need. There'll always be a lack. You tried to lie to your husband before he was your husband. You presented yourself as being something you weren't. He presented himself as being something he wasn't. So when you got together and he couldn't hide it anymore, neither could you, and it takes time. Sometimes we call it the 7-year itch or the overnight, uh-oh. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Up the next one, I said, what have I done? He looks different now in the cold, hard reality of the morning sun, doesn't he? He looks so good in the dark over there. Sounded good, too, when you had your ears stopped up with poison. But see, the problem is now the next morning you find there's something lacking. And the thing that you wanted, the thing that you lied about, turns out to be insufficient. That's what fail means. See, you cannot fail if you have what you need and you're sufficient. In other words, as a child, you were taught to be insufficient. You were given an inferiority complex. And let me tell you how you do it, Mom and Dad. And let me tell you how you end up, children, those of you that are grown now, being failures. You were taught that you lack and you're insufficient. And you did, and they did it to you in the name of love. Oh, sweetheart, I'll do that for you. Oh, no, you're too small to do it. Let me do that for you. Let me help you with this, my dear, sweet love pie. I just love you so much. You never let that child grow up thinking, I can do something. This woman, this man, they hover over you, correcting and say, I'm taking care. They never let you grow. Now, they think they're being loving to you. What they're actually doing is they're embedding in your mind a programming that's saying, you don't know how to do anything. You're lacking. You're insufficient. You're stupid. You cannot do so. I have to watch you constantly in the name of love, of course. And what have they done to this child? They've programmed you to believe that you are lacking and insufficient, which is the definition of the word failure. That child grows up, can't make a go of it in school, has problems with relationships with friends, has marital problems, has personal and professional problems, and everything doesn't work. What they need is they need to be born again, and they need to be taught. We have a Father now that says you can do it. You can do all things through Christ. I've not left you insufficient. I've given you a brain. I've given you mentality. I've given you wisdom and knowledge, and I've given you the authority and the power that goes with it. You can do anything you want to do as long as it's right. Now, that individual is going to succeed in everything. The problem is, you like to go to churches where they tell you God loves you just the way you are, and you don't need to change a thing. That's a lie from the pit of hell. They're treating you just like Mom and Dad did. They're not sitting there and telling you, you're wrong. You can do that. Try it. Do it. Come on. You can do that. And if you fail the first time, let's try again. And I'll show you where you failed, and I'll correct you, and I'll help. But you're going to do this. I'm not going to do it for you. And neither is anybody else. You're going to grow up, my friend. Or you're going to go, one of the two. So see, this thing of failing means to be programmed to be lacking and sufficient. Fail also means to lose strength and to weaken and to stop working. Perfect characteristic of your health. First you start losing strength, then you weaken, then you stop working. Now that's character. You start coming down with a cold and say, oh, I don't feel so good. I'm coming down with something. Yes, you are. You're coming down with lies. So first you lose strength, and then you're weak and say, I think I'll go lay down. I can't go to work today. And the next thing you know, you're not working anymore. You're constipated. You're everything. You need pills and this to make you do this. Nothing works anymore. Your temperature goes up. Your thermometer is not working anymore. Your digestive system, the flushing system, your kidney, nothing works. Constipation. Or you go the other way. You develop the other problem. You can't retain anything. And then you just can't retain anything. You start weakening because you get no nutrition from your food. You're not working properly. You're failing. Your health is failing. Why? Because you were taught lies. And every time, and incidentally, whenever you get sick, I'm telling you right now, and I don't care what you say, you lied. Somewhere along the line, you've been lying. Because now you're failing. And understand this, and you know this as well as I do. I used to do this trick all the time. You've done it, and your children have done it to you. I didn't do my homework. There's a test coming up, something going on at school. I didn't want to do, so I lied. And I got sick. And I stayed home. And they had the test, and I wasn't there, and I had another day to study or do whatever I was supposed to do. I thought, oh, man, I've made it. I've now learned how to beat the system. Then I grew up, and every time I didn't want to confront something, I got sick. And after a while, I said, wait a minute, my health is going down the tubes. Who am I kidding here? See, so the very thing that you taught to use to get out of your responsibility is the thing that's killing you. That's why you fail. See, you were taught to live on lies. And lies are going to lead you into failure every single time without variance. Fail also means to be deficient or negligent in an obligation. Now understand this. The man or woman growing up in this environment and then gets married becomes deficient or negligent in obligation. You hate your housework. The room you hate the most is the bedroom for obvious reasons, because that becomes an obligation. Instead of something that we can look forward as a God-given gift where two people can communicate, not only emotionally, but physically as well. Instead of that, it becomes an obligation. It becomes a duty. So what do? We find ways to get sick to stay out of it. Why? Because you were taught as a child to lie your way out of everything. Now the very thing you want to accomplish, you cannot. The very thing you want not to happen is what you cause. Because now you're deficient or negligent in everything that you do. You can't do anything with total commitment. You can't enjoy anything. No matter what's given to you, you have to find a way to be deficient and negligent in the expediency thereof. You can't do it. Now, you think there's something wrong with you from here down, and I'm saying it's from here up. If you will just sit, let me take the wax out of your ears. Let's get the poison out of your system so that you can hear, and you'll find out you're not deficient and you're not negligent. You're made in the image and likeness of God, and you can succeed at anything. I don't care what you can do. I don't care what you want to do. You will succeed at it. Bar nothing. You can do it. The problem is you've been taught to fail. You're a walking failure. And rather than get down on yourself, you ought to thank God that He's telling you not only what's wrong, He's not only grading you and say, fail, but He's put the right answer right behind it and say, oh, you've corrected me. Now, if I do this, the next grade is going to be passing. See, you don't come here just to be graded. You come here to be corrected. Now, this deficient, this failure means to be deficient or negligent in an obligation or a duty. It also means to be unable to do. Kids are famous for this. The minute you tell a child to do something they don't want to do, what do they tell you? I can't. I can't. I can't. And then once you get past, I don't know how. Oh, and they whine, and then the mother says, but yeah, God, that's sickening. You have to feel like giving them all oats. Tie a bag around and let them eat oats. They're whining all over the place. What you ought to do is stand next to each other. At least you can flick the flies off each other. Just whine. Oh, I don't know how, Mom. That one sweetheart, what am I? Oh, that just get right down to the bone. You know what I mean? It's like taking one of the things I hate the most, on chalkboard with long nails. Ooh, man, it just, oh, God. You know what I'm talking about. But you see, where did your children learn that? Oh, Lord, I can't. Oh, I can't. And the child is saying, oh, that's the way you handle things, huh? Your husband asks you to do something, but I can't, I don't know how, I can't. Then you turn around and tell your children to do something. I can't. Can't you see what you're doing? You're all programmed to fail. Because everybody's lying to everybody else. And the end, natural result, the inevitable result of lying is failure. Now, whatever you've got that's failing, it's because you believe lies about that that's failing. Now, you make me a list. If you have the guts and if you really want to change, make me a list of all your failures, and I'll show you where you've lied, been lied to, and are lying about those things. I'll tell you the truth about them, and then I challenge you to challenge me on this. Those things on the right will start being successes automatically, in some cases overnight. You see how important the truth is? Without the truth, we're dead. We'll fail. And here's the last result, and it's apropos. To fail means to leave, to abandon, and to be without. We're going to leave in a minute here. See, the person who fails, the person who, the ultimate lie, when your lies, all the thing you want to propose just simply aren't working, the last resort of the liar is to leave. Cease the relationship, abandon, and be without it. Now, what have you done? You've told yourself the ultimate lie. Because what are you going to do? You're going to start up another relationship with another individual just as bad as this. We're going to go through the same process. You're going to find out in time you've made the same mistake. You're going to be lacking. You're going to lose strength. You're going to weaken. You're going to be negligent in your obligations. He'll be negligent in his. You'll be negligent in yours. The children. Nobody wants to do their job. And the last result, again, is let's leave. So after a while, after a series of abandoning and failing this and failing that, you finally realize there must be another way. And there is. And his name is Jesus Christ. But it's going to come from a man that loves you enough to tell you the truth. You're not going to get it from a politician. One that tells you what you want to hear. The final analysis, you can leave, abandon, and be without. Or you can stop it right there and say, that's enough. I'm tired of losing. I must be wicked. I must not speak right. Something is wrong. Now, I'm not telling you what is wrong yet. I'm just telling you something's wrong. And the beginning is you're a liar. You tell lies, and that's why you fail. That's why when I come here, I'm very well prepared so that I make sure I don't tell you anything other than what's written right here. Because if I do, I'll lie to you. And I'm man enough to admit it. So I just look at this, and if they don't like that, then they don't like me, that's fine. But you're not going to walk out of here with more lies than what you came in with. That I can promise you. Brother Ken, would you close the services in prayer?